Hello, I'm Keyshawn Mesha, and I'm here interviewing my Uncle Bob Freeman. After writing my essay for the class, I thought about how I could possibly better explain what life in the South was like for Black people. So I looked to my uncle, who has often been a source of knowledge and history for me. In this podcast, he explains a little bit of what life was like for him growing up in the South. Occasionally, you will hear my voice throughout the podcast, elaborating on parts of the conversation and providing some of my own insight and commentary. Now, to begin. My uncle was born in the late 1930s in rural Kinston, North Carolina. He's a country boy through and through.
Hey, how you doing, Uncle Bob?
Good.
We want to start by, what was it like growing up in rural North Carolina?
Well, when I started school, it was like I had 2 miles from the school.
You walked 2 miles to school?
Yep, there and back every day. Now, they were the school that you could catch the bus and go to, but I had to walk a mile to get it. And it wasn't, I don't think my mother thought it was as good as the school that was in this little small town. So she enrolled us in the one was 2 miles away. But the one that, you grew up used to being able to walk a long way. Because you weren't that many cars.
Right.
And, I mean, few people had cars, but not that many, not everybody. Kids, bicycles, something like that. It wasn't too bad, at the time, things like segregation.
Oh, okay. So segregation
time. Yeah, you know, Black school, white school. We went to one school, they went to another one. That's when you had water fountains had black, they had color and white. Same thing with some restaurants.
Did you experience any like firsthand racism while you were down there?
Yes, but it was like, I guess growing up on a farm, I think got more trouble out of in the very beginning, most adults than kids. Most time when kids got a little bit, they started the school, the kids that you knew that lived down the road maybe half a mile from you, you didn't have no problem with them until most of the time until they started the school. And then they started mixing with other white kids who liked to start calling you niggas and stuff. But the kids that live not too far from me, I think they had, I got along with them in the beginning. Then they started standing on the edge of their property when we walked by and say something. My mother would tell me, don't be fighting nobody.
Had that been me that they were harassing, first it would have been. Then it would have been.
Did you?
No, my father saw me running one day and asked me why. And I told him because them kids were chasing. And he said, you ain't put a run for nobody. So I ain't run no more. I wasn't afraid of dogs because we had a dog. You grew up used to dogs and stuff. A dog, all you think you need was a stick. He could be, you didn't care how big the dog was.
Right.
You know, if you pop him upside the head, he'd stop. So, if you didn't run 9 times out of 10, he would, send the dog out the yard to chase
you. You heard that right. The sick dogs on them.
Right.
So if you ran, the dog would come run behind you. But if you didn't, you got a stick or something, the dog would stop. I throw at him, and little boy, you grew up long there, throwing rocks was, you got to be pretty good at throwing, because you throw birds and stuff, you throw them, so you can hit one of them.
Right.
And I don't know what you thought you were going to do with the bird as you killed him, but we used to do it. And so, I guess what I'm trying to say, if kids were bigger than you,
yeah,
I always think you got me a stick or something. And most of the time, you didn't have no more problems. But, I guess I was about the third grade.
Yeah, third grade?
About around the third grade, my mother, or my grandmother bought a house, and we moved in her house. And then it was like, I had to walk by, when I first moved over there, I had to walk by no white kids too tough. On where we went swimming. I was much older then, though. You went in a white neighborhood, you walking by yourself. Most of one white kid wouldn't, you were by yourself and he was by himself, he wouldn't say nothing.
Right.
He wouldn't say nothing. Only when there was a gang of them and you were by yourself. And then you would have, may have to run a little bit. But, I was a hustling little kid. I don't know. Even a little kid, I had made me a little cart.
Right.
I'd go around to the dump. Because soda bottles were worth a nickel, some were worth a penny. and scrap metal and stuff. Mm. Actually, we made the cart, not to go pull stuff, load it up for stuff to sell. Mm. We made it to play with. Like making the white kids, it was a great big hill. Every year they had, you could make a go-kart and whoop on the hill and see who would win the race. No black kid invited.
No black kids invited?
No black, just white kids. And we used to go watch it sometimes, but me and my brother would, well, you didn't have money to go buy a whole lot of stuff, so we used to make one. Then I think I got some wheels that came off in a hand truck. They had ball bearings and stuff in it, rubber on it too.
Yeah.
And we would grease it. Then we pushed each other around. Then we started going to, they had a place that people used to take corn and the cob off that corn. We used to make a tote sack. Well, you don't know what a tote sack is, but anyway, yeah. Go back. But anyway, it was just about twice as big as this pillowcase here. We fill it up and sell it. People would buy them for 10 cents a bag. So you line up a few customers, and you would go there and pick the people would take the corn. Truck would take corn there, and the cars come out. A lot of people pick them up, because people burn them for heat, too. And me and my brothers go get them to sell. And then next door, I think we had moved. And I know we had moved. And next door, there were white people living. Mm. And little kids, for not a couple of years, we played with each other, and they was all right. But the same thing now. They got a little bit bigger. And then one day, the little boy, I think maybe we were a year or two older than them, but not too much bigger than they were, me and my brother. But they did something they had never done before. They got on their porch and said, "Hey, you little black nigga." Now they had started the school when they did this.
Right.
And then we chased them off on their porch, back in their house. Then they didn't want to come outside. So I evidently at that point asked them why. And I think they said because we were chasing them. But we told the sister why. And everything got okay after that with them. But then I realized that even when I was living out in the country, that little white boy that we played with when I was like first, second, third grade, when they got to be maybe fifth or sixth grade, the attitude changed. In other words, they never said nigger. Nigger was a bad word along then. The N-word was a bad word. And color you didn't mind, but they say color was, but we didn't like nigger. That meant a fight. But my parents and their parents at that time, they just wondered why the little boy wouldn't come down to my house no more. He used to come down a lot because some relatives of his came from the city and they the one got him.
Saying the stuff?
Yeah. Because he had never said that before. But the little boy from the city came out there during the summer and stayed with them. He the one started saying nigga. So the other guy, he wanted to say nigga too. But
so it wasn't, there was still racism in the country. But the cities where is where that particular incident came from?
Most of the kids in the city that were going to school, older, were ones that small kids didn't, unless they were some old person told them to say it. Mm. As little kids, we just played together because they lived next door, would be in my yard, their yard. And I guess from sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth grade, somewhere along there, then the difference started. Mm. They would start saying nigga. But in the black, the neighborhood was still certain. Just like majority of the blacks lived in certain areas.
Mm.
And a lot of things that, because you grew up down there, you didn't even, I don't know if you was aware you was a second-class citizen or not right away. Because your parents, I think, they would tell you don't say this and don't say that to the white boys.
Mm.
And you been a little kid, you won't know why. They didn't give no answer. Long then, you just didn't talk back to your parents. Then you get hit upside the head. They said, shut up. They zip it. That's what they meant. Then you don't want no back talk. Parents didn't deal with that. Right. And neighbors, if you screwed up, neighbors will tell your parents. And you got, just like you got screwed up in school. The teacher will give you a note, you might as well carry it home because somebody's going to tell your parents anyway. Mm. Other kids will tell their parents and then they will tell yours. And that means you got a butt kicking. So I don't know. It, but I think you don't even, you just didn't bother to drink out of the fountain that said white.
Okay.
One said white, one said black. And it said colored. Certain little thing you noticed that there was a restaurant. No, there was a drugstore. Standard drugstore. You weren't supposed to sit at the counter. I could go in and order something, but I had to go outside with it. So like buying comic books. I used to like comic books.
No.
Now, white kids could go in and sit at the counter,
mm-hmm.
pick up a comic book out in the rack, and read it, and put it back. I could pick it up and go through it.
But you had to buy it?
They asked you if you're going to buy it. You know, if you sort of turn the page looking through it, you don't know to see if you want to buy it or not. They would say, if you're going to buy it, buy it. I'll put it back. And, well, you didn't like that, but you wanted the white kids sit down there and buy, get a soda or something, and read the book, put it back, get another one. Me, if I picked it up, I'm supposed to buy it. Things like that. And
learning about what life was like down south from my uncle was both humbling and inspiring. I got to hear from someone who experienced it, just how much internal strength was necessary to endure the abuses of the Jim Crow era. I was also proud that my uncle was one of the many to do so. His story reminds me of how fortunate I am to exist at a time when fighting back is an option. His experiences will serve as a testimony to what strength looks like. I'm Keyshawn Mayshore, and thank you for listening.